Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Jolly, bringing you the best of my Times radio show. You can listen live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, on your Times radio app, if you just can't get enough politics without the boring bits. Coming up today, it's back for the first time in, 7 weeks, PMQ's Unpacked returns. Tim Shipman joins me to pause the action in real time as Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak go at it. Yes, there was a lot of talk about concrete. Lara Spirit rounds up the best of the rest for us. At a moment, we'll have the columnist panel, but what we thought we'd do to mark what is an extraordinary anniversary is that every day for the next 46 days, we are going to prize open the door of what we like to call the Trust Vent calendar.
So I can see Therese Coffey, the new Deputy Prime Minister, the first big decision she's going to have to make is whether or not to go back indoors. She's consulting colleagues at the moment. Oh, so Therese Coffey's ordered umbrellas. The umbrellas are coming out. Oh, nice clear umbrellas. Very nice. Oh, now it is absolutely, I think we, the technical language, we absolutely f***ing down.
Why does it all?
Oh no, it's got absolutely, it's coming, like, this is actually ridiculous how heavily it's coming. This is actually ridiculous. Okay, so this is bad. The lectern's gone away again now, and so's, yeah, all the people outside over the level have gone back in again. Oh, we're gonna have to get my body out of there, hang on.
Now, we've been waiting for quite a while for the Prime Minister. The good news is there's now someone at the lectern. The bad news is it's a black bin bag.
We can only assume that right now Liz Truss is sitting at a lay-by somewhere with the engine off while the windows get all steamed up. Presumably listening to Times Radio.
Why does it always rain on me? Is it because I lied when I was 17? Why does it
bang on 5 o'clock. The lectern is now back out. They're giving it a dry off. Oh, I think we're on. The bollards are down. The bollards that block the road are down, and so is Robert Preston. So that can only be one thing. The new Prime Minister is on the way. I can see Hugh Edwards squatting. Dermot Murnaghan is squatting. There is a helicopter hovering overhead. I really hope for all concerned that the weather holds off. Applause there from I assume the Tory MPs at the far end of Downing Street. And now applause from the staff at this end, outside number 11. I can't work out if it's raining again or if it's just the water coming off the trees. But here she comes, folder underhand, Liz Truss at the lectern.
We have huge reserves of talent, of energy and determination. I am confident that together we can ride out the storm.
And we'll open door number two tomorrow. Right, up next, it's time to take a look at the day's news, of course, with Albert.
The Columnists with Albert, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on Times Radio.
And for the first time in absolutely ages, we're all together. We're in the studio.
Morning. I've missed it.
Hello, Alice.
How are you?
I'm very well. Nice summer.
Yeah, I'm in Devon, actually.
You're down in Devon?
Yeah, that's why you see me on the... I have been, but I've been...
So just as you finally got some good weather in Devon...
Well, back in London,
you're
I
back
know.
Back in London.
Where it's too hot.
Robert's always here.
Yeah, I am, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Hello.
Hello. It's good to have you both here.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. Now, here's a question. When you were down in Devon, Alice, did you see your local MP?
Well, my old local MP, I actually doorstepped because he is the tractor porn MP.
Of course.
It's Tiverton.
Neil Parish.
So I had to go to see Neil Parish, who was in his dressing gown. So I have seen him on occasions, actually.
Was it appropriately knotted or a gape?
Oh, no, it was all very decent. So I've met him a couple of times, but not really since. No, I don't really hang out with him.
Yeah, I've met Meg Hillier, Hackney South and Shoreditch. Fine woman, fine MP, chair of the Public Accounts Committee, I think.
Yep.
Is she still?
Yeah.
Great servant of Parliament. And yeah, I met her not in...
As a civilian?
Not in a journalistic capacity. I'm struggling to think when, but I've definitely met her. I met some councillors as well locally.
The reason I'm asking is because of all the hoo-ha over Nadine Dorris, and people say, well, I've never seen her. We asked you, Gov, to poll, have you ever met your current MP? And basically, it's 13% overall said they had, the rest of it hadn't. But there's almost no difference between parties. So in Conservative seats, it's 12%. Labour seats, it's 14%.
Yeah.
Lib Dem seats, 14%. SNP, 16%. Other, 13%. So it's basically the same.
Yeah.
This idea that, I don't know, the Lib Dems are really good at knocking on people's doors is basically exactly the same. But then we asked, is your MP any good? 33% said good, 31% said bad, 36% said don't know, so it's all split three ways. But there's quite a big... It goes up with age. You're more likely to say your MP's doing a good job if you're older, maybe because you have more interactions with them because you've got the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what really struck me, London, 47% said their MP was doing a good job. In Wales, just 21%. So that's the biggest difference. Men are more likely to say their MP is doing a bad job than women.
Mm.
But again, between parties, Conservative 33% said good job, 32% for Labour, 31% for Lib Dem, 33% for SNP. So there's no great difference between party, but it seems to be age and basically the MPs in Wales seem to be rubbish, Alice.
Yeah, they're not opening up fates, are they?
No.
Going to enough schools.
But then London, they don't have so many fates in London. That's interesting. It's quite a high figure, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess maybe people in London are just maybe they're more happy with their lives in general, possibly.
Are there more? I don't know. Are there more marginal seats if you get out into the... I don't know how big the London area is for YouGov purposes. If you get out into the donut, there might be quite a lot of those contested.
Yeah, but this is not about meeting. This is about doing a good job.
Oh, doing a good job.
Yeah.
But there might be a correlation between more.
Yeah, I think
activity.
Actually, it's more that if I was a female MP now, you get so much abuse online. I think they're more nervous going out. So I think before we had online and Twitter and. People were actually more sort of less worried, the MPs, about going and meeting people. Now I think they're quite nervous, and actually there have been so many incidents deaths that I think probably I would be quiet.
But also,
There's one who wears a stab vest. I mean, it's not as easy as it used to be, is it?
No.
13% actually isn't bad. I mean, that's sort of one in eight people in a constituency of, 60 or 70,000. I mean, are you saying that's a low figure? Because I don't think it is a low figure.
No, I was more struck just how universal it was. Given because YouGov could do it by they know where the people are answering the poll and they can cross check that.
I know there was MPs always talk about the personal vote, and I always find it a bit tragic because I think there was a survey done a while back that says an MP's personal vote is probably worth about 500 votes.
Yeah.
I.e., whether they've you can be the best constituency MP in the world and it's not going to save your seat against a national swing unless you've got the majorities under 500. Which is sort of tragic, really.
Although 500 now makes a difference, doesn't it?
It could do it. But that was all. I mean, I definitely remember the run up to the 2015 election. The Lib Dems kept saying, oh, no, don't believe the headline polls, because where we've got an MP, we're dug in locally.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter.
Ultimately, you can't change...
No, but you can see why people believe it, because if you meet 500 people that say you're great, you think that's a lot of people. It is a lot of people, but it doesn't... really matter in the great scheme
of things. It's marginal, but if there's a big national thing going on.
And now they've got the boundary changes, I think that's going to be different too, because they've got to get a whole new set of people on board.
Yeah.
I just looked it up, actually. But last year, June last year, they YouGov polled, have you ever seen or met the Queen in real life? And 19% said they'd seen or met the Queen.
Right.
But she was extraordinary, wasn't she? I mean, that was her thing. Yeah.
But that's basically doing the work of 650 MPs.
Yeah, but she was around for 70 years as well.
There is also that.
Yeah.
I don't know what the poll, I don't know what the same figure is for the King. Anyway, it was interesting what we actually look for in an MP. And actually, do you want them to just pointing at potholes, or is it about going into Parliament and holding the government to account, or running the government?
You want them pointing at potholes.
Do you?
I think local people do, yeah.
Potholes, they say they do.
Well, they want them to do both, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is that your local constituencies are half want one and half want the other. So, you know, like Stonehenge, when they say, you know, half the constituents want to have the bypass and half of them don't. And you're constantly juggling that. It's not like all your constituents usually want one thing. Although I'd say with something like sewage, they probably do.
Yeah, we can agree on that.
Yeah. Talking of sewage, have you seen the picture? There's a picture of... this obviously doesn't going to work putting it on the radio, but it probably have to issue some sort of warning if we release it on the radio. So there's an MP called Ben Everett. Let me see if I can find it. So he's a wild swimmer, and he obviously wanted to raise the profile of actually the rivers near him are all very good. But posted online some extraordinary pictures of himself. Here we are. Milton Keynes MP shows off impressive abs as he poses topless in wild swimming spot.
Let's have a look.
He sounds like the next Matt Hancock.
Goodness me.
No, he isn't the next Matt Hancock.
Yeah, that is impressive.
He's probably holding. I mean, he's holding it in, but he hasn't got much to hold in.
Yeah.
Look at this one coming out of the water like.
Oh my goodness!
Craig.
So he's actually doing any work?
And he's doing the arm up thing, which makes your bicep.
Just look. Oh, I'm just really really concerned about sewage.
That's what I do with my podcast. Makes your bicep look really big.
Does it?
Yeah.
No, I don't do that. Yeah. Anyway, maybe that's what people want. That's what people want. Have you seen your MP topless? That's what we should poll next. Anyway, we should probably move on from that. Alice, let's talk about your column today. Really interested in this, about this weight loss drug, Wegovy, which I just can't say without thinking of a very small Michael Gove.
Wegovy.
But your point is that basically drugs companies are going to make loads of money from this. And actually, it might be better if we tried to put more effort into stopping people coming fat in the first place.
Well, it's not just that. It's just there's this sort of slightly extraordinary scenario you get when you've got, for 50 years, all these big food companies making vast amounts of money, and even more recently, like Deliveroo, and just all trying to pump us full of food. And then now you've got another big pharma coming in and saying, look, we'll pop you, basically, and you'll be thin again. And then you'll just go up and down yo-yo. And these companies are making huge amounts of money while the rest of us end up having to, the NHS has to pick up the bill, and we're, you know, either too fat, too thin, or feeling pretty bad about ourselves. And if you look at the company in Denmark, it stopped Denmark going into recession. It's the biggest company now in Europe almost. And it is the biggest company by, literally miles, I think, in Denmark. So it's quite weird for the Danish. They've got this one company that is overtaking their entire lives. And yet they're one of the skinniest countries in Europe.
Despite all that.
But then...
Lego.
Well, they're not eating Lego.
No, I just thought I'd come up with another Danish product.
Yeah, some of the stereotype.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a good idea, this drug?
No, I think it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I do. I think I take a very, very old-fashioned view about this, partly because of my own experience is that I think it's not so much about willpower. It's about just shifts in your diet where you feel, for reasons of vanity or self-respect or health, that you don't want to be overweight, and you can then, in a long-term, sensible fashion, gradually reduce your weight to kind of where it should be. And I'm convinced that 99% of the population know. The education argument, I think, is a bit of a red herring, and as is the poverty argument. Yeah. I think most people can afford to buy healthy food, and most people know what is healthy and what isn't. They just don't do it.
Yeah, but the willpower needed now, I think, is so phenomenal because the companies are up against you. So anything that you do, like, you know, McDonald's are very, very good at selling their products, as are the supermarkets, as are you're constantly being bombarded with food. And I think that's quite hard, particularly as a child when you haven't got that much.
It's hard, but it's not impossible. And the parents can direct the child. I mean,
there is also a psychological thing. If you're struggling and having a tough time, you're probably not going on holiday. There aren't many treats in life. But having a packet, buying a packet of biscuits, having a drink at the end of the day,
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, you know, John Reed said that about smoking, didn't he?
Yeah.
He said one of the... and I think I take that point.
Yeah. But it is like smoking. We made it easier not to smoke.
Yes.
So I think you have to. You can't make it easier not to eat because you have to eat. But you can make it easier to eat.
You're down now to about 13% of the adult population in Britain smoke.
Yeah.
Just after the war, I think it was something like close on 60%, and that's taxation and I guess degree of education and putting it into the periphery of social acceptance. And you can do that. You could do the same.
I suppose actually,
you
even me same. Saying that, I've just realised.
Are you going
to
be left?
The way
you will
we've
be left...
been programmed to think, like treat means stuff that's bad for you.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you could treat yourself and eat a punnet of strawberries if you want.
Yes,
to.
And you can. That's what I'm talking about. You can shift your.
Yeah.
You can shift
but
your
it is really difficult, and I think a lot of parents find it hard when they're exhausted and they haven't got much cash. And it is just easier to give your kids an ice cream.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's what's hard, and that's why people are going to have a Zempic or they're going to take Wegovy because it makes it easier. So I can understand where they're coming from. I just think the companies have got to step up here too.
I think a treat is a treat, i.e. it's rare. So you give your kids an ice cream once a week and you go take them to McDonald's once a month.
Yeah.
You don't do it every day. That's not a treat, that's indulgence.
Yeah. And then if at the back of your mind it's like, well, it's all right, because we get really fat, I have one of these jabs.
Mm.
But you can have them forever. Like
yeah, so that's the biggest problem is that the NHS said they're only going to do it for 2 years. So that's why you're going to start doing this way, you know, exactly what they don't want you to do is you'll be yo-yoing up and down. And then it's really difficult. But on the other hand, the NHS have got to do something because 27% of people in this country are now obese. So they have
And 63%, if you include overweight, are either overweight or obese. I mean, it's
but
a
you've
real
just got really good willpower, basically.
Issue. But it's not so much about, it's a there's that, but it's also just about shifting what you regard as enjoyable to eat.
Not
I think.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, because if we're really honest with ourselves, you go for a McDonald's. I mean, I do that maybe once a year if I'm on the road somewhere. And it's a hit, but do you really, really, would you honestly say you enjoy it? I'm not sure you do.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you do.
It's not as good eating tomatoes straight from the garden.
Or in a sandwich.
Or in a sandwich.
Unless you get garrotted or something there, don't you?
Now, I need to ask you both. Yesterday on the show, Danny Finkelstein, I know you're both familiar with his work. He was on the show. And we were talking about Liz Truss's lectern, because a year ago today, Liz Truss became Prime Minister, with her Jenga lectern. John Stevens in the Mirror has been trying to find it. Danny said we should put it in a museum of political fiascos.
Great.
So on the show on Friday, we're going to open the museum. What would you like to put in the Museum of Political Fiascos?
I would like that suitcase. You know the suitcase that went in and out of number 10 with the drink in?
With the wine in it.
Yeah,
that's nice.
And then maybe we could do the cake as well. We could have a little corner, basically, with a broken swing.
Yeah.
You know, the karaoke. We could do a whole theme going on there, couldn't we?
That could be like the cafe, couldn't it? Instead of maybe instead of having a tray and moving along in the cafe, you have to put everything that you want in a suitcase and then wheel it up to the till, like they did in the co-op.
This isn't very nice, particularly from a aesthetic point of view. Remember Tony Blair's sweat-soaked blue shirt? when he mistakenly wore a blue rather than a white shirt.
Right. Yeah, it's very risky
for a party conference speech, and then did his big thing at the end with his arms up, and it was absolutely saturated.
That can go in like the fashion room.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a few suggestions of that.
And you could get like an odour, like in the cinema where you get sort of smells and
scratch
stuff.
And sniff. That's the Tony Blair's smelly shirt.
Yeah.
And
you
need to sell pasties, don't you, for George Osborne?
Yeah,
those pasty tanks.
They maybe all come from the shop at Leeds train station, which didn't exist.
Could you get a bit of the stage from the Sheffield rally?
Yeah, that's
because that would be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Theresa May's one.
Where was Neil Kinnock from?
It was Geordie.
Who knows?
He said, we're all right, didn't he? That was it. Have I not got that right?
I don't know. It's more the intonation. Whoa, right! It was like that. It was longer.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and he said it. And in fact, he said it twice.
Yeah.
Even though your people's toes were already curling.
Curling.
Back.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
My hair's just stood up.
I love it. I love it. That's definitely going. Or maybe the flags, because they had all those flags. Maybe we could get one of the flags from there. There's definitely a. Maybe
Michael Foot's donkey jacket, which wasn't a donkey jacket, it was a pea coat
or something.
Yeah, pea coat.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, if you've got suggestions of things that you think we should put in the Museum of Political Fiascos on Friday, email me matt@times.radio, matt@times.radio. And I think Patrick McGuire's going to join me as we take a walk around the Museum of Theatre of the Mind. We'll do that on Friday. Now, Alice, you're familiar with the countryside.
I am.
Keir Starmer has been writing for Country Life, setting out his plans for the countryside. There's a photo of him standing, surrounded by hay and cows, looking completely natural in his best blue jeans.
So this does happen, doesn't it, each time? But actually, I think Labour have got a point now. I think they are becoming the party of the countryside. And they all, none of them ever have any wellies, do they? Apart from Nigel Farage. He was quite good, actually.
Yeah.
Bizarrely.
I think they might have been on the Somerset
levels. He had some waders, didn't he?
He turned up in his own dirty waders. Yeah. David Cameron and his sort of best new hunters. Can Labour actually claim to be the party of the farmers in the countryside? Abby Kay is Deputy Editor at Farmers Weekly and joins us now. Hi, Abby.
Hello.
What's your assessment on how well Keir Starmer goes down in the countryside?
Well, it's a tough one, really. He's saying a lot of the right things. So he's recognised the ways in which the Conservatives are unpopular. So we've had trade deals, which will, by the government's own admission, reduce our own agricultural output. There's been delays to the introduction of the new farm support scheme. And in some cases there's low payment rates that have the potential to cause real damage to the sector. And he gave a speech to NFU conference last year, the National Farmers Union conference, which was really polished and it went down really well. You could have heard a pin drop. He had the audience absolutely captivated, actually. And he made the really important point that food security is national security. And he's absolutely right there. You know, we're only ever three meals away from monarchy. But the problem for me is once you scratch the surface, there's not actually very much underneath. There's no detail. So we had a little huddle at the National Farmers Union conference where I pressed him on this food security is national security point and said, well, are you going to increase the agriculture budget then if it's that important? Didn't get any response to that. I'm also hearing that the manifesto is really likely to be top line heading into the general election because they're pretty bruised from previous defeats where the detail was unpicked. So really, what are farmers actually voting for? It's just warm words at this point.
I mean, very specific, Abby's talking about there, is the general problem, isn't it, with the Labour pitch?
Yeah, of course, but he's in opposition. That's what he's not going to give any hostages to fortune. I mean, I remember going around with Blair in the 2005 election, going to Gloucestershire, I think it was, and the relationship there, the view there the Labour towards the Labour Party was absolutely toxic. I mean, it was the height of Countryside Alliance. It was after post Foot and Mouth, which had just delayed the election, actually. And I think the countryside, insofar as you can generalise about the countryside, has had a pretty jaundiced view of Labour ever since. I've seen it as the party of the metropolitan elite and so forth. And I think if Starmer is at least able to neutralise that or change it back a little bit, it's interesting what Abby was saying there about the conference last year, that it was, I mean, there was a time where the Labour leader wouldn't have gone to the NFU conference, I don't think. So that's interesting. And it's interesting that they're doing it at all. I mean, that sounds like a grown-up party preparing for government, doesn't it?
And poll-wise, they've done really well. So the Tories are doing appallingly. So I went to that conference and actually I was really interested how much has shifted in the last 5 years. You can see that the countryside are beginning to look for someone else. I mean, whether you'll get a large enough swing in some of them, but...
But I suppose also as well, I mean, they took Selby. I mean, that was in, you know, that...
That's pretty rural.
The centre of all seat.
Yeah.
But I suppose also, Abby, as well, in some of those, just the idea of cementing the get the Tories out message might mean that the Lib Dems do well in some of those areas. But just the sort of wherever you live in the country... Do what you need to do to get the Tories out. If you can land that as a message,
to detoxify the brand as well,
That makes a difference as well. How does Rishi Sunak go down with your readers, Abby?
Not great. As I said, the Conservatives haven't got a great track record at the moment. I can remain polite. And I do think that Labour have done a good job in capitalising on that and pointing out the areas where the Conservatives have gone wrong. But, you know, that image problem is really, really key. They do have a problem. Mm. People in the countryside have long memories. They remember the disastrous way foot and mouth disease was handled and that feeling that rural culture was under attack in the Blair era. And they've got some policies now, like they've got this right to roam. They've got a steadfast refusal to continue with the badger call. And those are two policies that play well to urban audiences, you know.
But they're not going to play well in rural,
wherever you like.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton there, and you can read them both in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/Times Red Box. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
You're listening to the Redbox Podcast. Now, time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
And Tim Shipman, the Sunday Times chief political commentator, is here. I was trying to work out, it's 7 weeks since we were last here, but was it even him? We missed a few towards the end of last term, didn't he, Rishi Sunak?
He missed quite a few. I think he did the last one, didn't he? And did all right, actually. But there's quite a lot of problems piling
quite
up.
It's a lot
since
of
then.
Problems. And I think everyone in Westminster spoke to someone in the Labour Party who says you literally couldn't have made up a row which suited their purposes better than this one.
No, nothing works in Britain. Public services are falling apart. The government are useless, and some of its ministers have taken leave of their senses. They've got a sort of belief that they're doing brilliantly when they're not. It's all there, isn't it? But, whisper it quietly, that presents a little challenge to the Labour Party if we're going to try and make this PMQs something other than just a massacre for the government. It's a sort of wide-open goal with a goalkeeper with his knees tied together and a ball, you know, made of explosives. is Keir Starmer going to destroy Rishi Sunak or is he going to punt it wide and blow his own foot off? Neil Kinnock got into all sorts of trouble in the past when he had what were perceived to be open goals that he was unable to sort of slot the ball away.
And actually, Ed Miliband, Jeremy Corbyn, there was one I remember, when Ian Duncan Smith resigned his work in Pension Secretary, Jeremy Corbyn didn't mention it.
Yeah.
I mean, at PMQs.
I don't think there's much danger of that. And I enjoyed our lunch so much, Matt, that I'm going to bet you that the school concrete scandal comes up again.
That is not a bet that I'm willing to take. Ministers might remember that earlier in the summer, Tim lost a bet. He bet that Keir Starmer would definitely mention Boris Johnson during PMQs, and then he didn't. So we went for lunch instead.
I'm trying the trick again.
And you can listen back to that on the Redbox podcast, The Art of the Political Lunch. And very nice it was too. I'm not taking that bet today, though. It's interesting, though, Keir Starmer this morning has been repeatedly asked what would be the Labour plan, and he said he would not engage in sticking plaster politics.
Yeah. What about
not necessarily
breeze block politics?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, you know, that gives a little bit of hope to the people who are currently slotting Rishi Sunak into his suit of armour, strapping on the metal plates and saying, don't worry, boss, it'll all be fine. You get yourself out there. It'll all be fine. Don't you worry. But he does feel a bit like a man in a sort of suit of armour who's about to face a lightsaber or a...
If I was Keir Starmer, I'd be tempted to just ask about something else.
Totally different. At least to begin with.
Just throw him.
Yeah. See what happens.
Well, let's find out then. We are live on Times Radio, live on the Times Radio YouTube channel. We will pause the action as we go along to explain what is happening. Let's go live to the House of Commons. This is Keir Starmer on question number one.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I join the Prime Minister in congratulating the Lionesses and his comments about Sergeant Savile? I think we all speak for the whole House when we speak on that subject. I'd also like to extend the warmest welcome to our new Labour member for Selby and Ainsty. Yeah!
So one of the by-elections.
He's already made history for the Labour Party by overturning the largest Tory majority ever in a by-election. Yeah! And I'd also welcome the honourable members for Uxbridge and South Ruislip, Somerton and Frome.
One Tory, one Lib Dem.
Mr Speaker, the roof of Singlewell Primary School in Gravesend collapsed in May 2018. Thankfully, it happened at the weekend and no children were injured. The concrete ceiling was deemed dangerous and liable to collapse, and everyone knew the problem existed in other schools. Yet the Prime Minister decided to halve the budget for school maintenance just a couple of years later. Does he agree with his Education Secretary that he should be thanked for doing a good job?
Mr Speaker, I know how concerned parents, children and teachers are, and I want to start by assuring them that the government is doing everything it can to fix this quickly and minimise the disruption to children's education. We make no apology for acting decisively in the face of new information. And let me provide the House with an update on where we are. Of the 22,000 schools in England, the vast, vast majority won't be affected. In fact, in two-thirds of inspections of suspected schools, RAC is not actually present. And to tackle the 1% of schools that have been affected so far, the 1%, we are assigning each of those schools a dedicated caseworker and providing extra funding to fix the problem. In the majority of cases, children will attend school as normal and the mitigations take typically just days or weeks to complete. We will do everything we can to help parents, support teachers and get children back to normal school life as quickly as possible.
Keir Starmer.
OK, let's pause that there, Tim. Not a surprise that Gillian Keegan's comments that nobody thanks us for doing our jobs and the vast, vast majority of schools are unaffected. But clearly, Rishi Sunak trying to actually communicate some of the stuff they haven't really managed up until this week, the detail of what they're actually doing,
yes,
rather than being cross that people are criticising them.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and actually, that wasn't too bad a moment for Sunak. He kind of did sound like he was on top of it. I spent most of the answer partly listening to the words, but also watching the cutaway shots to Gillian Keegan, who was sort of nodding gently and saying, mouthing "it's true" and "yes" to the opposition as they were clearly barracking her across the chamber. You know, we know that this is a problem that's been around for a long time. They have got new information. They are acting on it. But really, it's one of those things where nobody's really had a grip on this for a very long time. And be interesting to see how Starmer takes this on now. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he got the obvious jibe out of the way early. Sunak's now done his statesman-like, you know, response.
This is what
we're
doing,
but yeah, he can't do that for the next five questions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he can have a go. And he probably will.
And it will be interesting to see if he manages to sort of keep it together or does he get ratty.
This has one of those little temper tantrum moments for Sunak written all over it, seems to me. And if he can avoid doing that, then...
And clearly what Keir Starmer wants to do is try and needle him.
Yeah.
And Rishi Sunak can be right that this is, what, 1% of schools. But 1% of schools shut, if the opposition can pin the charge on the government, 1% of schools shut as a result of your incompetence.
Yes, and it's like...
That's still a charge that will
like
stick.
It's like that tweet that the Labour Party did yesterday, where they said, you know, Mayor of Amityville says almost everybody not eaten by a shark. You know, the town in Jaws. It's not going to be persuasive to parents who are sending their children to school for the first time, like me.
And actually, or also just everyone else.
Even well, if you
don't
indeed.
In fact, to some extent, it's more likely to have a negative impact on the mindset of voters who don't have children at school, because it doesn't matter that they're not personally affected. They just get this idea that something's going
wrong. It's just, again, just an example of things crumbling and falling apart and the government appearing not to have a grip on it. And it's, you know, Sunak had a couple of bits of good fortune over the last couple of weeks. The GDP figures were revised up, and he can say that's turning. Inflation was a little bit lower than they had feared it might be. And it looked a little bit like the Tory narrative coming into the autumn was going to be slightly better than it was when we were last speaking, you know, back in July. But this has just blown up out of a clear blue sky and, again, is questioning, you know, the competence of the government. And don't forget, that's Sunak's calling card. The only thing he's got, frankly, in a very difficult environment for the economy and the cost of living and 20 points behind in the polls, was to try and persuade people that he was competent and that he could do the boring grind of government well. And this is attacking that narrative pretty heavily.
Well, let's go back then. Question number two in the House of Commons is Keir Starmer.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Wood Green Academy in Sandwell was on Labour's building list in 2010. Yeah. They scrapped it, and now children there are in a crumbling school. Exactly. The head of the National Audit Office accuses him of taking a sticking plaster approach. Yeah. The NAO report says he cut £869 million. The person who ran the Department for Education says he is personally responsible.
Jonathan Slater, who
on Monday, he leapt to his own defence, saying it's utterly wrong to blame him. So why does literally everyone else say it's his fault?
Mr. Speaker, the professional advice from the technical experts on RAG has evolved over time, and indeed it is something that successive governments have dealt with, dating back to 1994, Mr. Speaker. Now, as new advice has come forward, the government has rightly, decisively and swiftly acted in the face of that advice. But he talked about school budgets and talked about what I had done, but let me just walk him through the facts of actually what that spending review did, because he brought it up. Well, no, he's brought it up, so presumably he would like to hear the facts. Funding for school maintenance and rebuilding will average £2.6 billion a year over this Parliament as a result of that spending review, which represents a 20% increase on the years before. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, far from cutting budgets, as he alleges, the amount spent last year was the highest in a decade. Mr. Speaker, that spending review maintained the school rebuilding programme, delivering 500 schools over a decade, a pace completely consistent with what had happened previously. And, Mr. Speaker, it is worth pointing out that during the parliamentary debates on that spending review, the Labour Party and him did not raise the issue of RAC one single time. So before he jumps on the next political bandwagon, he should get his facts straight.
Was quite ballsy again for Rishi Sunak.
Yeah, and it, you know, I mean, this is always the thing with him. If you give him a chance to get into the weeds, he won't dance around it.
No.
He'll jump straight in, burrow as deep as he can, and you know, throw the detail out. You know, attempting there, despite all the weed stuff. I mean, I'll be honest. I think most, you know, you can listen to that and think, yes, he's on top of it, but you can also think, I can't really follow all that. But also, what I did get at the end of it was, you know, an attempt at a soundbite, which is back at Labour, which is this bandwagon jumping thing, which does come up about Starmer, that's again one of the few lines that they've got that lands about him. So far, he's making a decent fist of it, and you know, rightly pointing out this has been around since, you know, halfway through the Blair government, but it does feel like a sort of systemic political failure.
Whenever we have an argument about money during PM Hughes, it will always depend on where you start and stop your measuring. So he's just said there, you know, he talked about the biggest investment in a decade. Well, they've been in power for that entire decade.
Yes.
The question,
from our rubbish investment before, we have raised it now.
And he could say that the budget was going up, but it might have been the plan that it was going to go up by more. And so they took money out of it. So it's still gone up, but it's not going up.
And then that's before you throw in real terms and all the rest of it.
When inflation is so high. The point that Keir Starmer was making, talking about Wood Green School, pre-2010, the Labour government had a Building Schools for the Future programme. It's one of the biggest rows when the coalition was formed, was Michael Gove scrapped
that. First thing he did, basically.
And it was a total mess. They didn't communicate it very well.
But again, they had a list. Everyone was looking at the list then, and the list was completely wrong.
The list was wrong. There was a huge bun fight. It was a total mess. Dominic Cummings ended up working in government as a result, which is a side issue. And the point that Keir Starmer's made is that one of those schools scrapped in 2010 was Wood Green. They've now got problems with RAC. And had it been rebuilt or refurbished then, they might not have the problem now. And so, yeah. Let's have some more arguments about who's right and who's wrong. Let's go back to the House of Commons with Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, Carmel College in Darlington was on the Labour's building list in 2010. They scrapped it, and now children there are in a crumbling school.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, we have him saying it's nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
On the other side, we have the facts. And there's a simple way to clear this up. Why doesn't he commit to publish the requests from the Department of Education for the school rebuilding programme and what risks he was warned of before he turned them down?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman's now brought up twice the Labour school rebuildings programme. He's now brought it up twice. So let's just look at that and look at the facts surrounding that, because we do know the truth about that programme, Mr. Speaker, because the NAO, as he's called on, actually reviewed that programme later on. What did they define? They found that Labour school rebuilding programme actually excluded 80% of schools. Next, what did they find? What do they find? That it was a third more expensive than it needed to be, needlessly wasting resources that have gone to schools. And Mr. Speaker, this is the worst bit. The worst bit is that that programme, because now he's talking about the physical condition of schools, that programme only allocated funds solely on the basis of ideology, with no regard whatsoever to the physical condition of schools, Mr. Speaker. That's why the Independent James Review described that programme as time-consuming and expensive, just like the Labour Party.
Oh, so now we're arguing about what happened in 2010 as a sort of distraction from...
least I suppose you can commend the Tories for some decent sort of research work there. Though, if my memory serves me, that review that Sunak has just quoted at great length was commissioned by Michael Gove in order to prove that the thing was a disaster so that he could scrap it, which may explain why it was quite so damning. I think Labour would have hoped... Starmer was 3-0 up at this stage, and you've got to say it's probably 3-3.
Yeah. Interestingly, just looking at the schools that Keir Starmer is choosing to highlight, so the one in Gravesend he mentioned to begin with, because that was the one which had fallen down. He then chose Wood Green, which is a school in the West Midlands in Wensbury. And that last one he mentioned, Carmel College, I think, is in Darlington.
Could it be these are all marginal seats, Matthew?
I'm just putting it out there for people to do their own research and look into. But yeah, it's
Darlington certainly is.
Darlington is definitely right. And that's another... There's a political angle to this. That in tightly fought marginal seats, if you've got a school which has had to shut because of this, you know, it might not be making a big difference nationally, but they'll be having a right bun fight over it between now and the election.
They will, and it's a great opportunity for a good Labour candidate to make a big fuss and get on the front page of the local paper. And
thanks to Keir Starmer raising it in the House of
Commons.
Correct. Okay, so that was question four. I wonder which marginal seat the school is going to be in question number four.
I will. We don't want to start off with somebody leaving so early, because that's what's going to happen, Keir Starmer.
Well, Mr. Speaker, they want more, so let me continue. Ferry Hill School in County Durham was on Labour's building list in 2010. They scrapped it, and now children there are in a crumbling school. The truth is, this crisis is the inevitable result of 13 years of cutting corners, botched jobs, sticking plaster politics. It's the sort of thing you expect from cowboy builders, saying that everyone else is wrong, everyone else is to blame, protesting they've done an effing good job, even as the ceiling falls in. The difference, Mr. Speaker, is that in this case, the cowboys are running the country. Isn't he ashamed that after 13 years of Tory government, children are cowering under steel supports, stopping their classroom roof falling in?
Anymore. Just seriously, I will calm down. First session, I understand people are excited to be back at school.
Lindsay,
but we expect better behaviour.
Tick him off, Tory MPs.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is exactly the kind of political opportunism that we've come... Exactly the kind of opportunism that we've come to expect from Captain Hindsight over here. Before today, he's never once raised this issue with me across this dispatch box. It wasn't even worthy of a single...
It's the same for this side as well. Can I just say, we're going to have a calmer question times going forward.
Oh,
I want to hear the
don't.
Question, I want to hear the answer, just like your constituents, Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, before today, he never once raised this issue with me in Parliament. It wasn't even worthy of a single mention in his so-called landmark speech on education this summer. And if we'd listened to him, our kids would have been off school and locked down for longer. It's as simple as that. He talks about 13 years. Well, let's see what happened. When we came into office, two-thirds of schools were good and outstanding. Now it's 90%, Mr Speaker. We introduced the pupil premium to get more funding to the most disadvantaged pupils, Mr Speaker. Today, they are 75% more likely to go to university. And as a result of our reforms, we now have the best readers in the Western world, Mr Speaker. That's what 13 years of education reform gets you, all of which opposed by the party opposite.
Well, there we are. I'll be doing my research on these schools. I think you're right. Basically, they are all very marginal former Labour seats. One of which, in fact, is Sedgefield.
Oh.
So the one of the schools that he brought up, I think, is in Sedgefield, previously Tony Blair's seat.
Correct.
Held by Labour for many years, taken by the Conservative Paul Howell at the last election. And he's now got a majority of, 4,500. And this just goes to show why Labour want to weaponise this. It is real life. It's not some technicality thing. It's not arguing over abstracts. Real life things happening in exactly the sort of places they need to win seats.
Yeah, and it's good politics. Some good language there. The sort of cowboys are running the country. That's the kind of a good broad brush sort of try to catch all attack on the Tories and what they've presided over. Children cowering under steel supports is quite emotive. But yeah, I mean, you know, Sunak has got up with his Weetabix, and Boris Johnson will be sort of stirring and harumphing if he's listening to this, that Sunak has used Captain Hindsight, his preferred insult for Starmer.
For a long time.
And also, you know, a reprise of the Labour would still have had us in lockdown stuff, which is a popular Tory line. But, you know, the stuff at the end is a fair reflection from the Conservative point of view of what's gone right in education. The buildings might be having their problems, but, you know, the Gove reforms have given us the best readers in the Western world, and generally, overall, more schools are better than they were. So, again, I think that almost was the best exchange of the lot. But I think we're still in sort of score drawy terrain.
It's quite. So, I've done all my research. So, Wood Green School is in West Bromwich. West Bromwich West, Labour for many years. The Tories took it at the last election. They've got 3,800 majority there. The Carmel College, which Keir Starmer mentioned, Darlington, was held, of course, by... who was the MP there? Jenny Chapman. She was the Labour MP, lost her seat, held now by the Conservatives by 3,300.
Yeah.
Keir Starmer giving every candidate in those target seats... massive.
Well, they're all classic red wall seats they need to get back, essentially. Yeah.
Well, so what we're up to, question number
five.
Four. Game, set and match to Sunak, says Kevin. The dreary and dull approach to asking questions was completely demolished by the facts presented by Rishi. Someone else in the text says, please, may I have the job of pulling the string that operates Suella Braverman's nodding head?
There is quite a bit of
nodding.
There's
quite a bit of
nodding. She's got her serious face on
serious,
today.
Serious
this is, sort of, this is very grave.
Government is
nod.
Right. Right, let's go back to the House of Commons. We are up to question number five from Keir Starmer.
But it claims to be a man of detail. There are 100 parliamentary questions from this side on this issue and an Opposition Day motion. But, Mr Speaker, let us continue. Holy Family Catholic School in Bradford was on the Labour building list in 2010. They scrapped it, and now children there too are in a crumbling school.
Mr Holden, I think I've heard enough. No, then, this is the last time. You make your mind up. You either go now or you're quiet for the rest of us.
And, Mr Speaker, if you can believe it, in April this year, the Education Secretary signed a contract for refurbishment of her offices. Ah. It's got a personal stamp of approval on it. It cost, I can't quite believe this, £34 million. Can he explain to parents whose children aren't at school this week why he thinks a blank cheque for his Tory minister's office is better use of taxpayers' money than stopping schools collapsing.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Speaker, what I'd say to parents is, in the receipt of new information, we have acted decisively to ensure the safety of children and minimise disruption to education, as we have laid out and communicated extensively. That is the right thing to do. And I would also gently point out to him, Mr. Speaker, whilst the Department for Education started this process 18 months ago in spring of last year, as far as I can tell, in Labour-run Wales, they still don't know which schools are affected, Mr. Speaker. But again, he brought up this issue of funding, Mr. Speaker. And again, let's look back to what happened in that spending review. Because in that spending review, I increased the Department for Education's capital budget by 25% to a record £7 billion, Mr. Speaker. It tripled the amount that we spend on children with special education needs and disabilities. It improved the condition of the overlooked FE estate, and it set the course for per pupil funding to be the highest ever. But it also, Mr. Speaker, crucially, invested £5 billion to help our pupils recover the lost learning from COVID. £5 billion, Mr. Speaker, and he might remember that because we wanted pupils learning, he wanted longer lockdowns.
Blimey, right, he's really pushing that one, isn't he? Longer lockdowns.
He is, and I mean, just, well, I'm sure there's much to talk about there, but just to leap on that last bit, there he is boasting about putting £5 billion into recovering lost learning during COVID.
Mm.
You go and ask Boris Johnson how much money he wanted Rishi Sunak to put into that. They commissioned a review.
Yes, Kevin...
Oh, Kevin something.
Connor, Courtney, Costner.
Anyway,
yes,
massive expert. You've spoilt it by getting the name wrong now. I was just going to gloss over the name because I couldn't quite remember it. I think he wanted £14 billion and Rishi Sunak put in five.
Sir Kevin Collins.
Collins, that's the fella. Big row between, you know, the then Prime Minister and his Chancellor, and Sunak's now boasting about it. Anyway, an interesting little footnote. But, yeah, I mean, the more effective part of the Sunak answer was yet again to turn to Wales and say, you know, they still haven't got a list of schools, they don't know what's going on, and Labour's running it. You know, that has the potential to have an impact. But I think Starmer's finally got his nose in front with the attack on the fact that they were quite happy to sign off £34 million for the Education Secretary's office when this is money not going to schools.
And actually, there's something about sometimes these stories take off in part because of the minister at the heart of them. When everything that Chris Grayling touched turned to the opposite of gold, you know, this stuff starts to stick. And a combination of Gillian Keegan's attitude to it, not doing media over the weekend but doing a weird video with music, then being caught on telly swearing, and her general attitude that she's not getting the thanks that she should be getting, coupled with the fact, you know, she's got a lot of money, she wears a big watch, she's posted pictures of herself doing a charity homeless sleep out in quite an expensive looking mosquito netted day bed in her garden.
Prada onesie or whatever.
Exactly. And all, you put all that together and £32 million on doing up her offices. Put all that together,
and that's what
and
you know,
she becomes a caricature.
What do people take away from this? They take away the, you know, I like Gillian Keegan. She's good fun. She's outspoken. That's what's fun about her. But this is showing a degree of naivety about how you go about doing these jobs. And you know, you can wear an expensive wristwatch. Lots of members of the cabinet do. Yeah, spending £34 million of taxpayers' money on your own office and then making a Horlicks of this,
yeah,
that's what the public will take away. Yeah. What are they talking about in the bars? You know, they're talking about collapsing schools, or maybe, yes, but did you hear what she spent on her own office?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's pretty damaging, isn't it?
Just to update you on the stats that I've been compiling, Keighley, that last school he mentioned, the Holy Family School in Bradford, is in the constituency of Keighley. It's got a Tory majority of 2,200.
Not for long, what you would have to say.
Having previously been a Labour Party, held it before, it won it in 2017 with a majority of 239. Tories took it back. Clearly, Labour have got their eye on getting it back. I wonder which marginal seat school is going to get a mention in, as we go back to the House of Commons. There's a PMQ's unpack. Matt Jolly, Tim Shipman. Let's go back to the House of Commons. It's question number six from Keir Starmer.
You
I think he just doesn't get how this "it's all fine" out there is so at odds with the lived experience of millions of working people across this country. And Mr. Speaker, let's go on. This is a long list. At least six schools in Essex were on Labour's building list in 2010. They scrapped them, and now children there are in crumbling schools. What he won't admit is the reason he cut these budgets, ignored the warnings, is quite simple. Just like he thought his tax rises were for other families to pay, he thinks his school cuts are for other families to endure. Doesn't it tell you everything you need to know? That he's happy to spend billions of taxpayers' money sprucing up Tory offices, billions to ensure there's no VAT on Tory school fees, but he won't lift a finger when it comes to protecting other people's schools, other people's safety, other people's children.
Mr. Speaker, I know he comes here with these prepared scripts, but he hasn't listened to a single fact.
From my prepared
script. A single fact of six questions about the record amounts of funding going into schools, about the incredible reforms to education impacting the most disadvantaged children in our society, a record that we are rightly proud of. And yes, of course he can. Of course we can name the schools. That's because we are reacting to information and publishing that information, Mr. Speaker, so we know where the issues are, something that we're still waiting for by the Welsh Government in Wales. But Mr. Speaker, of course he wants to try and score political points of something that we are dealing with in the right and responsible way. But I do note that he has not mentioned a single other thing that has happened since we last met across these dispatch boxes.
Ah, somebody
Speaker.
Got a pre-prepared script.
He talked
to make
about hard-working
points.
Families across Britain, but what's happened? Energy bills down, Mr. Speaker. What's happened to inflation? Down, Mr. Speaker. What's happened to small boat crossings? Down, Mr. Speaker. And when it comes, Mr. Speaker, and when it comes to economic growth, what's happened? It's gone up, Mr. Speaker. He tried time and time again to talk down the British economy, but people weren't listening, thankfully. His entire economic narrative has been demolished, and the Conservatives are getting on delivering for Britain.
Right, point of order. I need to apologise to the people of Keighley. It's pronounced Keighley, not Keighley.
Yeah.
So there's that. I think we should mark down Keir Starmer for using the phrase lived experience.
Yes, we probably should. But the point he makes, I think, is probably one of his more powerful points against Sunak, which is that by sort of getting into the weeds and saying, look what we've done and this is it's all going fine, the Prime Minister sometimes feels a bit detached from where the public are in terms of
I'm not against it as an argument. I just think he should not say lived experience.
No.
Or mouthfeel or any one of those phrases.
Yeah, the
which,
public realm is another phrase that's beginning to jar with me.
Yeah.
I heard someone on this channel use it yesterday and I thought, oh. Yes.
And then he tried to move on. I mean, as a surprise, he attacks Keir Starmer for turning up with his pre-prepared script to score political points and then read out his own pre-prepared script to score political points. Interestingly, boasts on his watch, energy bills are down, inflation is down, small boats are down, year to year on year, sort of. But there's a reason. He wasn't claiming it was all down to him when they went up. That was all down to international factors. And I just wonder whether or not the public are going to give the government the credit. I personally don't think any normal member of the public gives a monkey's
I don't think the public will give them credit for these things turning around. But the government's argument is always we get the blame when they go the wrong way, so we might as well try and claim the credit when it goes the other way. And, you know, more broadly, there is a sort of... It's not so much that the government gets credit, but that if things feel like they're going in the right direction, people generally begin to feel a bit better about stuff.
Yeah.
But as ever, the minutiae of these things from a political point of view is not necessarily the same as the lived experience because, you know, are energy bills down or are they just going up more slowly? You know, inflation down, brilliant. That just means prices are going up a bit slower. They're still going up.
And GDP being better than we thought. makes no difference to a normal person's life.
No, it doesn't, except that it might affect the cost of borrowing, and it sort of puts a lie to the idea that we're the total embarrassment of the whole of the G7. Though that is not an argument that is going to win too much favour in the Dog and Duck. Again, it's the kind of thing that can have a sort of holistic effect on the state of politics. Sort of robust effort from,
I'm going to say they're both managed. I'm not sure that Keir Starmer wrapped this up and put a bow on it in a way that he might have been able to do.
No, I mean, Starmer hit the target, but Rishi Sunak saved more balls than he was expecting him to and wandered out to the penalty spot and punched him on the nose a couple of times. I mean, is this a good week for the government? No, of course it isn't. But I would say it was 6-4 at worst, and... Yeah. Frankly, if you'd asked most Tory strategists this morning, they'd have taken that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think most Tory MPs by the end were breathing a sigh of relief and indeed getting excitable in that confected way that they do when they think, we've sort of seen this off. So, it was not 6 goals into a open net.
And it wasn't a sort of a phrase, it's not a week, you lead my party, you follow your party, I leave. A huge moment like this, which we think captures everything that should be the argument against the government. It's not clear that Keir Starmer quite put the lid on that. But talking of confected excitement, Lara Spirits here, Times Red Box Editor, she's been watching the best of the rest on the back benches so that you don't have to. Overall, Lara, the mood?
They were quite badly behaved today.
Oh,
at one point, Richard Holden was nearly kicked out. He's, of course, actually a minister, but there was a lot of jeering. Although I think there always is. Maybe it's just felt slightly more rude today.
It felt like Lindsay Hoyle's sort of cape. He looked very headmasterly today, didn't he? There's this oh, dear class, you're back. And I much preferred the empty school over the summer.
There was that moment when he almost kicked out. There was a moment where he suddenly thought, am I going to kick this government minister out? And then he sort of stepped back from it. It was like,
One last chance.
If I give you one more warning. So who are we going to go for first then?
I mean, obviously we're going for Stephen Flynn.
Obviously. Give the people what they want.
His questions weren't actually his best, but I feel like it's not fair not to do Stephen Flynn, seeing as we haven't heard from him for a while. And the second one on the cost of living, I do think is important because people might have missed that Stephen Flynn actually did reshuffle his team this week. It wasn't just Sir Keir Starmer and last week Rishi Sunak who did it. So we have had a reshuffle. That reshuffle, in fact, people have said, represents the fact that Stephen Flynn, differently to Hamza Youssef north of the border, is keen to make his Westminster operation more focused on the cost of living and less focused on constitutional issues like independence, which Youssef thinks will be dominating the next election. So have a listen to this.
Mr. Speaker, you'd be forgiven for thinking that the Prime Minister thinks everything is all right. But let's look at his proposals for the winter when it comes to a cost of living package. Because when it comes to energy bills, his plan, of course, is to do nothing. When it comes to mortgage bills, his plan is to do nothing. And when it comes to food bills, his plan is to do nothing. So when the Secretary of State for Education said earlier this week that everyone was doing nothing, she was referring to the Prime Minister, wasn't she?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I think it's a little bit out of practice because when it comes to energy bills, what we have done is pay for around half of a typical family's energy bill over the past year. Support worth £1,500, Mr. Speaker, benefiting families in Scotland. He asks about mortgages, Mr. Speaker. The Chancellor's mortgage charter covers 90% of the mortgage market and ensures that a typical mortgage holder can save hundreds of pounds a month when it comes to their mortgage refinancing. And when he talked about energy, thanks to the actions of this government, we are supporting the hundreds of thousands of jobs in the Scottish oil and gas industry, securing this country's energy supply, something that he opposes. I will always do what's right for the people of Scotland, Mr. Speaker, and it's time the SNP did the same.
You know, it wasn't Stephen Flynn's...
wasn't his best.
..best, punchiest, but he basically got the same response from Rishi Sunak regardless.
Yeah, and I mean, Rishi Sunak feels like this is a good week given that we had those revised figures on growth to be talking about the economy. I think given every other issue that he could have been asked about this week, he feels most comfortable probably on that ground. So not a great tagline. I think it's fair to say from Stephen Flynn. I'm afraid.
Very good. Right, so let's move on. What was better then from the backbenchers?
Well, this was very interesting, albeit not entirely surprising, seeing as we saw her ask a question to similar effect of Gillian Keegan, the Education Secretary, earlier in the week. But Dame Priti Patel, of course, the former Home Secretary, asked probably the most sticky question, I would say, that Rishi Sunak faced from his own backbenchers today when she pressed Rishi Sunak on schools. So have a listen to this.
Speaker, the Prime Minister is aware of how the rack issue has really affected schools in Essex. We've got a high number of schools that have been impacted, and he's rightly said today that the government's doing everything it can to get children back to school. Can he try to commit, and I know there's a debate later on today, to fully funding both the capital and revenue costs that are associated with getting children back into school? And I would hope that he would commit to meeting the leader of Essex County Council, because they are pioneering some great reforms right now where they're looking to support, maintain schools, as well as a Academy Trust, and I think actually the government could get some good insights in terms of how we can get children back to school fast and also look at the funding model for this.
Can I first of all start by thanking my right honourable friend for the engagement constructively that she's had with the department, and indeed pay tribute to her school leaders and local authority for everything that they are doing. I am happy to give her the reassurance, as the Chancellor already said, new funding will be provided to schools to deal with this issue, but also to ensure that we can get through this as quickly as possible for her constituents and parents, and indeed everyone's. DfE are in the process of increasing the number of dedicated caseworkers from 50 to 80. We have 35 project directors regionally on the ground to support, and we've increased the number of survey firms by more than double, Mr. Speaker, so that we can rapidly, over the next few weeks, fully assess all the relevant schools and have a mitigation plan in place.
Stephen Kidd.
Now, this is really striking, because Keir Starmer mentioned six schools in Essex, but it was reported yesterday there were 54 schools in Essex with potential WACC concrete, 15 of them run by Essex County Council, 39 run by Academy Trusts. Obviously, there was a lot of this concrete around in Essex in the 70s or whatever. And it's interesting that, explain with the difference that Priti Patel was asking about, the difference between capital and revenue.
Well, she is very keen that Rishi Sunak meet with Essex County Council for them to basically explain that. Because he's saying he wasn't responsible for making these cuts. The government has invested a record amount. Actually, they aren't to blame. And Priti Patel very subtly, I think, given that, of course, she is a Conservative MP and she doesn't want to necessarily outwardly criticise Rishi Sunak, is basically saying other people know more than you this issue and you need to talk
and
to them.
And he's sort of just talking in general terms about money. And the argument has been over the capital money, which is for the buildings, so if you need to knock down a building and rebuild it or fix it in some way, that's a capitalist money. But if with some of these schools, they're talking about busing children to another school, who's paying for that bus? And the schools are saying the government should pay, and the government, you know, says it's going to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
This is the sticky issue because, of course, Jeremy Hunt on the airwaves this weekend said we will do everything it takes, we will fund what's necessary. And actually, it seems that that's very unclear given that earlier last week, schools were told, you know, if you are making alternative arrangements and mitigations, those will come out of your existing budgets.
Tim, I was thinking only yesterday we didn't heard from Priti Patel very often.
Dame Priti Patel.
Dame Priti Patel, if you don't mind. But it's interesting, she's chosen to go on this at PMQs when clearly she's got a massive issue on her plate in her constituency.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, she probably wouldn't have been thanked for going on anything else by her constituents. Yeah. She did it politely, but there was a definite air of the smiling steel behind there, wasn't there, as you've been discussing. Surely not gently suggesting that someone knows more about something than Rishi Sunak.
Surely not.
Normally has stared at every problem until all the facts submit to his will.
In fact, Labour have just put out a statement saying that they've been through the list that the Department for Education has released, and 19 of the schools which have got the reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete had building projects cancelled in 2010. So 19 schools, which were literally part of the Building Schools of the Future, cancelled by Michael Gove, they've now got the... I mean, whether or not it would have been dealt with is, you know, a separate question, but it's clearly now they've got 19 schools, potentially 19 seats where they can really hammer that point home. Where else are we going, Laura?
We're going to Craig McKinley, who is another Conservative MP, but is raising the issue of small boats and is trying to place the blame, I think, quite pointedly on the door of the EU. So have a listen to this and make up your own minds about whether or not it might work as an attack line in the next election.
Very good.
I'd like to offer some assistance on the small boats issue. Has my right honourable friend considered the incongruity of the fact that a UK dinghy manufacturer trying to sell into the EU market would have to apply the CE marking, customs codes and the potential of being stopped and checked? And similar applies perversely when a simple thing like GB to NI trade. But none of this applies, seemingly, when these huge, supersized, dangerous, cut-and-shut dinghies are taken in from Turkey across the EU border into Bulgaria and Greece. Is he as confused as I am by the EU's double standards on this matter?
My honourable friend is absolutely right that we must do all we can to stop the boats and tackle illegal migration. And we know that the export of small boats across parts of the European continent is a vital element of the smuggling gang's tactics. And that's why, specifically, we are stepping up joint operations with Turkey, Mr. Speaker. And I raised this with the President when we spoke, so that we can tackle organised immigration crime and specifically disrupt the supply chain of boat parts that are used for these dangerous crossings. And I will continue to keep him updated on our progress.
I didn't really understand what he was talking about there.
I think what he was basically... What the Prime Minister was talking about.
No, what Craig McKinley was talking about.
It's a sort of clever point that, well, we would have... In order to send a small boat to France, we would have to comply with their codes. Yeah. And yet, where do all these amazing big small boats come from that don't comply with the EU? You'd think they'd, instead of... I mean, it's a sort of fatuous point to say, almost, why don't you stop the smugglers by banning their boats and saying like they're not EU compliant?
It's almost like the people smugglers aren't big adherents to health and safety legislation. Yeah. And the kite mark that you
but
might
surely
find...
surely this is a violation of the purity of the single market and ought to be, you know...
Clamped down upon.
Someone ought to come down on it like a ton of bricks.
I mean, it's an interesting point. I suppose it allowed Rishi Sunak to repeat what he wants to say and turn the focus back on some of his pledges.
Yeah.
Have we got anyone else?
We have got a final one today because we have slightly more time. And this just made me think, I feel like we've had a week where everybody has been trying to ban lots of things. You see that disposable vapes are probably to be banned in Scotland. Obviously, we banned machetes last week, even though actually it's not like you were necessarily really allowed them beforehand. Laughing gas is now going to be banned from the end of the year. But here is Flora Anderson, I think, raising an interesting question about what actually constitutes a ban and when a ban means a real ban, and that's over plastic in wet wipes, which I'll admit doesn't sound hugely interesting, but just take a listen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Every year, billions of wet wipes go out into our rivers and oceans and clog up our sewers. Yeah. I've been campaigning on this for years to ban plastic in wet wipes, and the government has finally promised to ban plastic in wet wipes, but that was 5 months ago and there's been nothing since then. So will the Prime Minister today finally give a date when that ban will come into force and make a difference to our environment? Or is this another broken promise from his zombie government?
Yeah. Speaker, in the comprehensive plan for water that was published by the Environment Secretary in April, we did confirm our intention to ban wet wipes containing plastic, subject, of course, as is legally proper, subject to a public consultation. That consultation will be launched in the coming months in autumn of this year, and I know ministers will keep the House updated on progress.
Craig McKinley.
Ban everything, Lara.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start with banning everything and then just agree to lift bans on a case-by-case basis.
Do you use a lot of wet wipes in your house too? We use a phenomenal amount, and I've never once put one down the loo.
No, because it ends up in a fat
very, bird. Very bad.
Very, very bad. I feel like I need to ask you now, Lara. Do you use a lot of wet wipes?
No, I actually don't. I don't think I've used a wet wipe in a really... I did use one
Tim's got small children. I think he's towelling himself.
Yeah, we have some very dry ones that have been there for probably years in the Parliament office in Westminster, which occasionally are used to.
The only time I've ever seen an adult use a wet wipe was at a Labour Party conference a few years ago where one of the hotels ended up with no water. And I remember a columnist for the Daily Mirror sitting in a curry house using wet wipes to wash himself. It's one of the most unpleasant things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, on that visual image, Kevin Maguire?
It was Kevin Maguire. There we are.
Oh, that visual image.
He was given 2 litres of water by the hotel with which to drink and ablute, and he resorted to wet wipes.
And that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the podcast. Don't forget, you can get Lara Spirit's PMQ's Unpacked email in your inbox with your Times subscription. Just go to thetimes.co.uk/redbox and subscribe right now. But for now, for me, Matt Jolly, it's goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.